Hi, and welcome to Reasonable and Necessary, Australia's premier podcast series on everything you ever wanted to know about the National Disability Insurance Scheme, brought to you by the Summer Foundation. I'm your host, Dr. George Salaporis, and in this episode of our special series on COVID-19, we talk to upskill lead Linda Hughes about the importance of planning ahead in order to stay safe as Australia opens up. Check it out. Hey Linda, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Thanks, George. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I know that a lot of people watching know you and love you. And for people who don't know you, can you just introduce yourself?
Oh, yeah. So my name's Linda Hughes. I work for Summer Foundation on the Upskill Lead. So my role is to train support coordinators and allied health professionals. We really recognise the important role, the vital role that allied health professionals and support coordinators play in ensuring that people with disability live well and are included in the community. I've also been in the disability sector the disability community for quite some time. I'm the parent of a 29-year-old man who's got complex support needs, and that sort of drew me to being involved in advocacy and working and being involved in the sector for some time, particularly around sort of, you know, wanting to achieve good outcomes for people with complex health needs or complex support needs generally.
And you do some fantastic work, and I know that you've been very active around trying to address issues related to COVID and people with disabilities. Can you tell us a bit about that, and especially as we move towards a COVID normal, what does that look like for your family?
I think that COVID, has created a high level of anxiety for a lot of people, but particularly for people who've got complex health needs or for people who've got family members who have complex health needs. So we really, I think COVID normal for us is not too different from lockdown in many ways. It sort of really involves, it almost feels like a constant risk assessment of how safe is this, what are the, you know, what's the options here, can we, you know, what precautions can we take to ensure that we don't bring COVID into our family, and particularly to my son. So it's sort of COVID normal. It feels like just a constant level of risk assessment, to be honest, around what's safe and what's not safe, and what strategies can we use to minimise the risks.
So what have you been doing up until now?
So I suppose we've been really ensuring that mask wearing, PPE, using the use of PPE. My son, as I mentioned, has complex health needs and disability, and requires people to be in close proximity. So the idea of social isolating is really difficult in terms of getting the support he needs. But certainly having a tight team of support workers, having the team really well educated and understanding the risks, so that even in their personal life they can ensure that they're taking reasonable precautions in their daily life outside of work. So there's the good hand washing, the good hygiene practices, generally having really a high level of cross-infection control measures in place. And we have these in place generally, but I suppose it's just taking it to another level with COVID risks.
And now we're moving to a point where, you know, we're going to have community transmission as a part of life. I'm really interested in having a conversation around what we do to plan for this. And I know that you've done some thinking around, you know, what would happen in a situation where possibly Jacob was exposed. Can you talk us through some of that planning?
So I suppose there's a couple of things that are strategies, really. It's like prevent. So you've got your sort of cross-infection control measures, the things that you do like social isolate or try and avoid crowded situations and closed situations. So you've got your prevent, and then you've got a preparation for the what ifs. What if Jacob gets COVID? What if I get COVID? What if, you know, and et cetera. So there's a couple of, those sort of things there that you've kind of got the plans in place just in case. And I think when we say that, you know, COVID is going to be, you know, the thought is that COVID is going to be endemic, that it's just going to be in the community everywhere, that it's not, it's a good process to have those practices in place. One of the things that I think is really important is a sort of a COVID companion or a hospital passport, or there's various names for these type of documents, having that prepared early so that if Jacob or generally if any person has to go to hospital, having a COVID passport or a hospital passport that you can hand to ED, it's a good idea all the time, but just particularly now, that that can provide the emergency department staff with some really important knowledge about the person. And that really includes things like, you know, what is a person typically like? Do they need glasses on? Do they need a hearing aid to communicate? Do they need a, if they're deafblind, do they need a tactile interpreter? What helps keep a person feel safe and secure and minimize distress? All of those type of things can be included on this document, as well as things like who's your doctor and what medications you're on. But it really starts to give emergency department and hospital staff a good picture of a person and how to support them in a positive way in a hospital environment.
I like that. I think that one of the things that is really key is to think about what is it that people need to know so that the experience is one that, you know, reflects what my needs are, right? So, you know, I'm really interested in, you know, how we can plan ahead with respect to this. So you talked about this COVID passport. So is there a document that people can download, or how do they sort of fill this out and get to having one that people actually, you know, use and read and implement?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is it's got to be done now. It's no point doing it when someone's on their way to hospital. So it's a part of that pre-planning and preparedness. It's called, there's various names. One's called a COVID companion, and that's on the Australian government website for COVID preparation for people with disability. There's another called Julian's Key, and that's another type of hospital passport. And if you just Google hospital passport, one more is called A to D, is admission to discharge. And that's a really quite a comprehensive document, but it's got the top five in that, and that's the top five things the ED department needs to know when you turn up there. So if you Google hospital passport, or have a look on the Australian government's COVID website, you'll find these sort of documents there pretty easily.
That's really helpful. I also think it gives you the opportunity to explore some of that complex issues that you might encounter when you are in hospital. So, for example, you know, if you need a support worker in hospital with you, you don't want to have that argument, you know, when it's all happening and when, you know, the oxygen's low and you're about to, you know, go into a coma, right? Like, you need to have that conversation early.
Yeah, I think that we've got to be thinking about this early, and I think there's a lot of barriers to people in the hospital environment. We certainly know that there's barriers there, and there's some unconscious bias potentially even amongst hospital staff. And unconscious bias is hard to address because people aren't conscious of it. So there's issues there. So having the information, you know, really you know, having information readily available. The idea is that, you know, having an understanding of what a person really looks like day to day, as opposed to how they turn up when they're in hospital. Sometimes there might be some considerations like, you know, part of that unconscious bias might be diagnostic overshadowing, and that's where someone's, you know, someone's behavior might be attributed signs of being unwell might be attributed to behavior or attributed to their disability in some way, rather than actually considering that there's something really, really wrong with this person. So having that documented, you know, normally I'm like this. You know, we've created a hospital passport a while ago for my son, and it's got, you know, photos of him doing things in it even. So hospital staff can actually get a bit of a picture, literally, of what he looks like day to day and what, you know, what he's doing. So again, that sort of hospital, that idea of conveying that information quickly, so that hospital staff can get an idea that this person, where a person is.
Let's take a step back then. How about the needs planned around a support worker being, you know, a primary contact or positive with COVID as well? You know, there's, you know, I had this situation twice in the last month where I had a support worker say that, you know, their family member was exposed to COVID. So I was like, oh no, what do I do? And it's like, oh, I should have planned for this. Have you thought about what to do?
Yeah, sort of, you know, it's always adapting. As I said before, it's kind of like almost this constant risk assessment. It's actually quite tiring to do all the time going, well, what are the chances? You know, today I have my son's support worker called to say that he's feeling unwell and he's going for a COVID test. So he's self-isolating until he gets a result. So that just kind of means that we'll play it real safe today and not go anywhere at all. Not that they were going far anyway. But so it's kind of just, I think that if he came back positive, then we would very, you know, very quickly be getting full PP'd up for any support for my son. At the moment, we can kind of go, well, the chances are it's pretty unlikely. We know this support worker is very careful in what they do. They're wearing PPE when they're working with Jacob. They're very careful in their personal life as well. So the risks are quite low. But nonetheless, we've got to kind of work through what the next thing, what if. And, it's I don't have any solid answers, George. It's just so hard to think about. But having the PPE, we've got more, I suppose, the high-level PPE on hand should we need it.
And I think that it's not about, like, getting overly, anxious about every single circumstance, but to really think about, well, these are the things that could happen. This is what I should do. Get prepared, get the necessary, you know, PPE, you need to get on with your life, right?
Yeah, and I think the best thing we can do is have everyone vaccinated. I think that's, you know, that's the best thing. If you've got, you know, my son's vaccinated, anyone who's in contact with him is vaccinated, and ideally anyone who's in contact with anyone who's in contact with him is vaccinated as well. So it sort of really reduces the risk of someone catching it and reduces the risk of them spreading the virus. So I suppose that's the number one, this number one safeguard. As we said before, we know that COVID is still going to spread through the community just because of the very nature of this Delta strand in particular. That we've got to have some other contingency plans in place.
You know, the other thing is that things keep changing and developing, and we now have access to these rapid antigen tests that you can now buy at the local supermarket. And I picked up a pack before they sold out What are your thoughts on using those tests?
I think this is really important. I think this is a way of really kind of, they're not like the PCR tests, which are much more accurate, but they're pretty accurate. They're a good test to ensure that people who are coming to work with people with disability are not excreting the virus, don't have the virus, don't have COVID. So I think they're actually quite useful. I'd be really encouraging support providers, service providers to be considering using those with their staff, insisting on staff having testing, particularly if they are working with people who would be very vulnerable even when vaccinated to COVID. So I think this could potentially really save lives, to be honest.
Yeah, what I've learned though is that you should still go and get your standard PCR test if you have any symptoms. And with the rapid antigen testing, they work well if you use them regularly. There was an article in The Lancet that said that, if you use them 3 times a week, then you actually get a really good, accurate reading of whether that person has come into contact with the virus. So I did a bit of research myself on that. And I think that's the key, do your research and talk to your doctor about what will work for your situation.
Yeah.
Are you going to use them in your family?
So I think that we will be using them. We have to develop the protocol for it. I think that it would probably be every 3 days that support workers self-test. And if they feel that they have been in a situation where they might, where their chance of exposure is higher, we'll give them the option of sort of putting their hand up for additional testing. I think that they're actually one of the good things about them is they're pretty cheap. They can becomes just a really small cost in terms of if you consider the cost of a support worker over an 8-hour shift, it's a very small additional cost. And an important, really important safeguard, I think, alongside other PPE and other strategies that you use, not on its own, but certainly I'd be sort of certainly talking to people and advising people to talk to their doctor and consider using these.
Yeah, absolutely. Speak to your medical professional before, making any decision on what's the best approach. And before we go, Linda, do you have any final words of advice for our viewers?
I think that it's just really advisable to plan in advance, as I said, being prepared, having that list of what-ifs. It's easier if you've kind of thought about things in advance and you've got a plan of what you're going to do next. That makes it quite much easier when the plan is there and you go, okay, this scenario has happened and this is what I would do in that case. So I'd really recommend people have those plans, having your COVID passport or your hospital passport ready to go as well, is a great idea too.
Great advice on that. Thanks for joining us today.
No worries. Thanks for having me on.
That's all we have time for on today's episode of Reasonable and Necessary, brought to you by the Summer Foundation. To be notified of future episodes, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and the notification bell. Thanks for watching, and until next time, stay well and reasonable.